Survive and follow along with me to the one of the things you love.
Girl's time, the childhood memory, and after listening to Anya, I wish I could read it in Irish. Anyway, my mother wrapped my swimming top and my old worn-out sandals in a big yellow towel. There were stones in the town. Up the hill and along the country road, our steps quickened, eager to get there. We took the shortcut through the farmyard, the farmer's words ringing in our ears. Mind the cows, close the gate. Climbing over ditches, we trod through trenches, splitting a new turnip, the sweet taste lingering. Spikes in the hayfield pierced our feet. The river glistens, beckons. I race my friends down the slope. We stripped, covered in our towels, and pulled our elastic tops over our young bodies. Cow dung and muddy patches squelched beneath our feet. With more stones we built up the pond. Freezing water made us shiver. Deep enough we swam all day. Spreading our towels, we lay in the long grass as the sun warmed us. Our mothers came with sandwiches and kettles. The boys joined us. Their pond was further up the river. Gathering sticks, we lit fires, sitting in circles, eating our sandwiches, ham, tomatoes, hard-boiled eggs. Time for ghost stories. The sun crept towards the horizon, dark clouds gathered in one more game of hide and seek. Heavy raindrops, the cap of thunder, lightning flashes. Scrambling, we gathered everything up, climbing the hill to the main road. Soaked to the skin, our towels covering our heads. The lorry stopped. We jumped on board and sang all the way home.
Good evening, friends and all.
Happy birthday, Joe.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Joe.
Thank you very much indeed. You shouldn't have said that because now everyone will have to buy me a drink and I'll never be able to drive home. But anyway, I wanted to do something a bit unusual tonight for me. I normally read some of my own stuff, but last week I was in Dublin for the anniversary of my father's death. He died about a year ago. And he was a man who loved poetry, and one of his favourite writers was this man, Henry Wadsworth Longfellow, and a poem he loved was The Village Blacksmith. So I just wanted to read it tonight in his memory, in his honour. The Village Blacksmith. Under a spreading chestnut tree, the village smithy stands. The smith, a mighty man is he, with large and sinewy hands, and the muscles of his brawny arms are strong as iron bands. His hair is crisp and black and long, his face is like the tan. His brow is wet with honest sweat, he earns whate'er he can, and looks the whole world in the face, for he owes not any man. Week in, week out, from morn till night, you can hear his bellows blow. You can hear him swing his heavy sledge with measured beat and slow, like a sexton ringing the village bell when the evening sun is low. And children coming home from school look in at the open door. They love to see the flame forge and hear the bellows roar, and catch the burning sparks that fly like chaff from a threshing floor. He goes on Sunday to the church and sits among his boys. He hears the parson pray and preach. He hears his daughter's voice singing in the village choir, and it makes his heart rejoice. It sounds to him like her mother's voice singing in paradise. He needs must think of her once more, how in the grave she lies, and with his hard rough hand he wipes a tear out of his eyes. Toiling, rejoicing, sorrowing, onward through life he goes. Each morning sees some task begin, each evening sees it close. Something attempted, something done, has earned the night's repose. Thanks to thee, my worthy friend, for the lesson thou hast taught. Thus at the flaming forge of life our fortunes must be wrought. Thus on its sounding anvil shaped each burning deed and thought. Thank you.
Thank you. Next up is Rosie O'Regan.
Hello. I'm going to do the same poem I did 2 weeks ago, but it was just after coming out of me then, and I think it wasn't quite ready, so I'm going to try it again tonight. And the sonnet, and it's called When Dreams Sleep. In the walls of the world I am wept, when in her dreams I fall to sightless sleeping, rise heavy with man's overwhelming debt that ticks the heartless clock of timekeeping, up with rats chasing their own tails, up the ass of ubiquitous ignorance, running rat rings around nonsensical sales, blinkered to death's diligence. Too many tears do not ease the silent cries of dreams unanswered, left to drown, howling that rats too must die, and much beauty is yet to be known, sobbing you to sleep in the world's open eye, rocking you awake to dreams in flight. Thank you.
Thanks, Rosie. Paul O'Mahony.
As the man said, follow that. Bloody hell, that was great. Okay, this is my effort to confront some of what's going on in Ireland. It's called the Register of Good in Ireland. There is actually something on the page. The Register of Good in Ireland. This is a land fit for emigrating. My children's children will speak. Birmingham, Bahrain, Bristol and Bollocks, Kilburn, Cricklewood and Christnallswear. I am a greenhouse, force-fed, sheltered, all my issue imprinted with memory of Holyhead. These days I fly. I have peopled shores of river and sea. strong enough for survival of the fittest shoot. Out of my numbers slip raw fingernails that grip the slightest ledge. Howl language that survives long enough to procreate. I used to disappear into the graves. You could follow a Mormon to locate me. Eventually I came back. Or if it wasn't me, it was my DNA. Do not accept. Like the classical painting of the returned, I was hung in treasured places. I was no sooner back than I was gone. But I had impregnated you with sperm of dissension. I certainly left you unsatisfied, so that you could do without me, Mother McCree. Recently I came back to Ireland to settle, brought children for the rearing. I snatched my babe from urbanity so that she could grow up in profanity. Nama. Never accept my assets. If I didn't invent it, why should I support it? This is a land fit for emigrating. We have it in our blood. I can take my children back to the Olympics of hope. Their bags are packed now. We have one foot in the Ryanair seat, already checked in online. And we'll take no baggage this time. Is there a reason to stay? Why should we lose our deposit? Is there a register of hope in Mayo, Boyo, or Ballybritis baby? There's a cow and a field. Software from the Amazon. Viagra from County Cork. A tree stump in Rathkeel.
Next up is Blue Butterfly. On one side of the wall I sit, watch the smoke curl over. Lamplight spills its blood in semicircles, reaches white fingers along the grey wall. I sit and I watch them, make it when they make it, retreat and dissipate when they don't. There's a ladder, but I don't climb it. I leave it till another day. Now is not the time for scrambling for grave pride and fingers. Now is not the time for climbing up. Now is not the time for falling down. On one side of the wall I sit, watch the smoke curl over, outlining shapes on the wall's grey face, skimming shadows like shifting clouds, a face here, a word there, here a familiar silhouette that has walked away, all woven in climbing leaves with upturned faces to the light. They were climbing also. They were enlisted in this fight. What will we find at the other side? Bodies reaching arms over top toward the light, spilling white dust as each foothold crumbles a little more stone to the ground, holding onto rough stone as if their life depends on it. And maybe sometimes it does. When I look again, I wonder if the wall's grown smaller or if it's me who has grown taller. And there's a ladder, but I'll not climb it. I'll leave it till another day. Now is not the time for scrambling, for grave cries and fingers. Now is not the time for climbing up. Now is not the time for falling down. On one side of the wall I stand, my back pressed against the wall. Watch the clouds rush together, moon's white face to cover. On one side of the wall I stand, my back pressed against the wall, a sigh, a breath escape. But on the other side I hear the sound, returned. I knock, answered is my call, by me or whomever else is standing at the other side, with their back pressed firm against the wall. As we start to climb, something angles my arms upwards, a cool wind guides my feet. As we start to climb, the wall holds on to me. Brown leaves are turning green. Brown leaves are turning green. We have a long way to go, so don't look down. Don't look down. The ground can't stay beneath our feet. up Ed O'Dwyer.
I wanted to read a poem by James Benson called I'm in Paris with You, but it's not absolutely necessary.
I do though.
The crowd want to hear it, or at least one of the crowd want to hear it. Does anybody else in the crowd want to hear it? Incidentally, if O'Veil ever got him, he'd be bigger than Derek Mann.
I'm going to say bigger than all you,
That's not possible.
No, not that big. Anyway, in Paris with you. Don't talk to me of love. I've had an earful, and I get tearful when I've downed a drink or two. I'm one of your talking wounded. I'm a hostage. I'm marooned. But I'm in Paris with you. Yes, I'm angry at the way I've been bamboozled and resentful at the mess that I've been through. I admit I'm on the rebound and I don't care where I rebound. I'm in Paris with you. Do you mind if we do not go to the Louvre? If we say sod off the sod in Notre Dame? If we skip the Champs-Élysées and remain here in this sleazy old hotel room doing this and that to what and whom? Learning who you are. Learning what I am. Don't talk to me of love. Let's talk of Paris. The little bit of Paris in our view. There's that crack across the ceiling, and the hotel walls are peeling, and I'm in Paris with you. Don't talk to me of love, let's talk of Paris. I'm in Paris with the slightest thing you do. I'm in Paris with your eyes, your mouth. I'm in Paris with all points out. Am I embarrassing you? I'm in Paris with you. Okay, that's James Benson's poem. And it's not an answer to the poem, but I started writing it like 20 minutes after reading the poem, which is why I read it. And this is We'll Always Have Paris. We could say to ease the moment, we'll always have Paris. Whatever at the time that meant, let us remember here how we had such bliss. Yes, I know that now it's all so sad, but we should find some compensatory way to look at this. My darling, aren't you glad we'll always have Paris? Always, for one thing, that really glorious kiss. Was it Arc de Triomphe or La Tour Eiffel? We'll always have Paris, though the rest's gone a bit to hell. But honey, listen, I'll explain how it's all going to be okay. We'll always have Paris. Always have champagne on the Champs-Élysées, in spite of all the other things we're sure to miss. Always have Notre Dame, even after this big awful crisis. Always have the love we made because the Louvre is pretty lame. We'll always have Paris, complaining about how steep the Moulin Rouge is, walking back that night under stars and moonlight. We'll always have Paris, memories to put any woes and regrets to right. say that we were never even there. Say we'll always have Paris, my dear. With you gone, I'll be saying every day, we'll always have Paris.
First, I'd like to express my appreciation for the wonderful poetry we heard from Anya. See what I was trying to say in my contribution to the five words. Something very short, maybe not so sweet. This name, Nama, is on everybody's lips these days. So I was just talking to a couple of people there at the bar, and I jotted down something in haiku form. So it's sort of a question for the two Brians who hold the future of our children and grandchildren in their hands at the moment. Future of Nama, keep bank bondholders afloat, risk sinking Ireland. Thank you.
Paul Casey up next.
Alan, how are you, man?
Hey, Paul.
Good to see you. How was Spain?
You didn't have a Norway. They're there. You fight me.
I've been very busy the last week, so no new poems from me. I'm going to say, I wanted to say two poems, but I'll just say the one. I was going to say that my dentist poem to my dad there. My dad's from over here, from South again. Actually, when I say it, do you mind if I just say the dentist poem there, yeah?
Yeah.
It's called Painless. I met my new dentist with a loose crown. He holds up the x-ray future of my diet, an orthopantograph of secrets to chart the teeth that shapes my every word. Upper right one, grease retained. Memory sinks into the trembling nuclei of my own electricity, a shaman's drug, a ritual for visions and childhood seconds, with ever pain the roots of wisdom. Upper right two, monticular bridge. He smiles with a ton of bite. Well, you've certainly been on the block. If only you knew, Doc, what some horses have to go through for extensive occlusal wear. Upper right three, retainer river bridge. At first appointments, I open wide, expecting shock, a waste of something like Jesus Christ Almighty. I muse on how they don't even blink, manage to avoid the right words, upper right four, MOD composite. His deja vu posture conjures all of my very own dentists, flashing by now like needles. I can't remember exactly how many, yet only these strangers have ever seen my thoughts this closely, could somehow know me where most have not. Upper right five missing. I've been to so many dentists that any nerves not removed by pulpectomy have receded up into the safety of my nostrils, perhaps even my eyes and brain. Upper right six crown. I remember beaming up at a dentist in the Curragh when I was 8, thinking, wow, women are dentists too. An upper brace for a crooked incisor, just great. No school though, who's to you? Upper right seven core and crown. The perfume of prosthetics, amalgam of a pink molding powder, and the faint but distinctive superiority of dentist's bread. Upper left one distal angle. Switch off my nose, please. This time chair reminds me I've had so many root canals that I don't need anesthetic. Upper left two distal angle. I've always loved my teeth, but something in my sleep would slowly grind the mind with the adventures of streets. How many nights Dad would ease a dollop of sacred whiskey deep into an aching corner to float me tearlessly away? Upper left three missing. I remember a big city dentist whose posture leant over me at an angle slightly proportionate to my health cover. Upper left four DO, astutely aware of the minute hand movements, the variations in pressure, bracing for the jolt of steel slamming into a nerve. Upper left five MOD and mobility. I exhume more buried treasure. A jackhammer vibrating brain cells. Perhaps if I defeated pain, then I wouldn't have to see it again. lower lips 1 to 4, present. Wishing for a masochism button, waiting for the thrill to burst right through my cheek and beyond. When pain becomes a friend, something must be wrong. Lower lips 5, MOD, amalgam. There's good news, though, for one who never used to speak much. As telepathic powers unfold, increase exponentially. Lower lip 6, missing, to the frustration of not being free, to answer interesting conversation, unable to nod primal sounds. Lower lip 7, MO. A country dentist, who for pocket change arranged a root canal and abscess bonus. Rough dentist. Most were gentle enough. Lower right 1 to 3, present. A distracted dentist, who while talking of gold broke off the side of a wisdom, leaving me to swallow the blame. It was gone anyway, never mind doc, there's much more to worry about out there. Lower right 4, missing. I've had the best of entertainment from dentists, a tiny dentist lady who once assumed an exotic yoga contortion to extract a stubborn molar, knees and legs all over the place. Lower right MO medial buccal composites. Lower right 5, an up and close real-life heroine she was, piercing my fantasies, the most clinical ice blue a woman could ever offer. Now that's education. Lower right 6, missing. I would have made a great dentist. One thing I always found odd though was that long drawn closeness of eyes, details only a lover should know. Lower right 7, missing. They are all lost lovers. Each an image of fascination finally tattooed onto a chronology of painless recollections. They're better than any psychologist. I've learned psychology from dentists. Lower right 8, MO amalgam. As he finishes, I tip tongue along the beaks and crevices, valleys, gum only Odysseus would dare. All these and more have witnessed my submolecular hero who celebrates in slippery leaps from filling to crown, his triumphant emergence. His victorious trophy of mouthwash, they have traced my life as casually as an old palm reader. I suddenly long to thank each one with a bright embrace. Painless as an x-ray, I rise from the chair, gather all that care, inhale the light of day.
Thanks, Paul. Next up, Patricia Welch. Good evening, one and all. This one is called Angel. When did you first know that you were an angel? I knew a fit from start, but not until I was 15, when the peacock spread its fan in my back bedroom. No one has ever seen that back bedroom. No one has ever gotten in with noise and clutter. But I'm good to those who come to me, and I give children wide my wings. You know these things all your life when you were cast out to be special and walk the eternal sidelines from observation point to observation point and can't see the decay of sobriety or the clock takes on. The fake grandfather clock cashed out the hour. Without a doubt, I find myself wedged between two handsome men, wrenched in drunken argument. I do not dare to intervene because each law is judged by its own kind, and everybody minds their own business once we reach the age of 18. Everyone must have wondered what it was like to handle a star in your hand without the benefit of a telescope. You send out the children fishing nets during meteor showers. My platform in my back bedroom gives me scope to leap almost to my death, kiss the moon, embrace the galaxy, dodge the asteroid and follow the constellation home. Colin Scully up next.
I was in Holland there for the last couple of weeks, and then Kerry. And I was sitting around looking out at the rain one day, so I just wrote this. It's called, How Did the Holly Grow? The bric-a-brac of hellish rain comes tumbling down. The fevered ribs are falling fast outside our town. We can hear the caravans tick-tacking on the roofs. The splish-splashy tinny sound, billowing winds, the crashing clouds. Rain dances on the window panes above my head. I hear the howling gale and gusts of summer fled. The beach is empty. Traces of children washed away by the sea air. The shifting sand. The drenched out holiday plans. Gale force winds coming from the east. The priest says, please prepare for pain. There's nothing to do but watch sky. From my one ruined eye on the world, I register a poem about rain.
A mysterious person called on Kapo Bertha of Nantes.
Afghanistan near Kabul. I am Ruth of France, Saint-Étienne, Montpellier. I am many myriad more routes. I have taken my last journey on this coil. My eternal itinerary has just begun in the night of May. I am the brother of Ruth. I took you home. We all did. One brother's pain is all brother's pain. Even your brother in the grave pains. I am the president of Ruth. How fit are you to preside? Great men pontificating while the commoner is pawned away in this chess of life and a death. A thousand deaths are but ink games. I am the artist of Ruth. Draw my portrait if you dare. How can you portray incandescence? Guernica resisted. Rise up now, Pablo II, emblazon the arc corridors of this ephemeral world. I am the architect of Ruth. Recreate me. Place me on this shattered edifice and let men marvel at their Armageddon. I am the priest of Ruth. Can you still priest to me? Preach to me? Teach me? Your words are wasted on these now deaf ears, not of my own choosing. I am the confessor of Ruth. This is my confession. There are no truths and there are no lies, but myriads in between. The juxtaposition of all our lives. I am the lover of Ruth. Can you still love me now? I feel your love stronger and stronger, longer and longer, lonelier and lonelier. I am the ghost of Ruth, no banshee wailing through the dark, mysterious night. I wailed my pain down floor 102 for splitting seconds and shrieked my way to hell. I am the port of Ruth, Khalid Gibran in the desert, Raftery Dowell on the bog, Kipling amongst the jungle. All of these and none of these, for a new phoenix arises on this Terran hills. I hear his words. Their silence deadens me. I am the child of Ruth, who never got to know my childhood. Evil men stole us away one cold September day over Manhattan. I am the conscience of Ruth, worried lest anyone be forgotten. A kindness, some small consideration. I am the soul of Ruth. Each of you knows me. Whether lying naked and chained in some dark dungeon because of some misguided cause, or resplendent on a Riviera boardwalk, strutting and preening, radiant redhead as I was, pursuing another cause. I am the sister of Ruth that never was, only in her mind. I would have been as all of the sisters who whispered and share and care. I am the country of Ruth, besmirched also by history. A child of marching feet and guns and war and death, and learned from all of this to stand among great nations. For Emmet's words resound, that fools left us our Fenian dead to start with. I am the tears of Ruth. They poured through that inferno, vaporized to the heavens, appeasing the soulless. No tears explain that madness, night or day. I will cry forever until you explain. I am the happiness of Ruth. As a young girl with no care, only dreams and fantasies of life, gaiety, smiles and kisses, take my hand and walk that tree-lined avenue. Weeping willows, beach copper walkway, skipping schoolgirl, nubile debutant, no plan but Saturday at Cannes. I am the laughter.
Much longer.
I am the laughter of Ruth, tossing my red head with abandon. I love that gayness, resplendent and rugged West Cork foreshores, amidst the thronging masses, or gear still among the madding crows at sunset in Crosshaven. O Gromachree, I loved you. All our songs are sad. I am the earth of Ruth. It is cold. My sisters are cold. Which ones, you say? In high mountain passes, tending goats to feed their young, or sweat-laden trudging the deserts of Sudan? We have a common bond, you and I are a sorority, much, much stronger than the alma mater sorority of all you proud alumni. Our alumnus is common to all men, to all women. I am the hypocrisy of Ruth, worse than the lies of Ruth, because I hide behind a veil of words. Men do this worse than any woman can, because they shun the spoken meaning word. These hypocrites never rest easy. So women, watch your men. How straight does he lie beside you in the married bed? Or better still, in the unwitted one. I am the freedom of Ruth. Why have I died? Are you freer now than then?
Good evening.
Hi, good evening. This is an extract of a short story written by American Amos. The short story is called Career Move. It's about a world where poets and poems are famous and poets get money and films people don't really care about and screenwriters don't get much money. Our main character is Luke, and he's the third extract of Red, and he's talking to his developers and marketers in a restaurant. May I get you something to drink before your meal? A cappuccino, a mineral water, a glass of Sauvignon Blanc? A double decaf espresso, said Luke. Thanks. You're more than welcome. Hey, said Luke, when everyone had ordered. I'm not just welcome anymore, I'm more than welcome. Give it a smile patiently. Such remarks were the downside of the classy fact that Luke, despite his appearance and his accent, was English. There they all sat on the terrace at Bebo's. Joe, Jeff, and Jim. Luke said, how did Eclogue by a 5-bar gauge do? Joe said, domestically? He looked at Jim and Jeff. Like 15? He said, and worldwide? It isn't going worldwide. How about Blackrook in rainy weather? Asked Joe shook his head. It didn't even do what Sheep in the Fog did. It's all remakes, said Jim. Period, Jeff. How about Fog Oak? Said Luke. Fog Oak? Who maybe 25? Luke said, sorry. I hear nice things about the old botanical gardens. They talked about other Christmas plots and bombs, delaying for as long as they could any mention of TCTs, kids whose yesterday evening tied the same. TCT is another poetry production company for Rival One, which has cost practically nothing to make and had already done $120 million in the first 3 weeks. What happened? Said Luke eventually asked. Jesus, follow the publicity budget. On his, said Joe. Nothing. Two, three. They all shook their heads. Jim was sort of thoughtful. That's poetry, he said. There aren't any other sonnets being made, are there? Said Luke. Jeff said, binaries in post-production with sonnets. It's called Compose at Castle. More, period, Jeff. Their suits and towels arrived. Luke thought that this was probably a mistake at this stage to one, but Tom. After a while, he said, how did for Sofonica Anguissiola do? Joe said, for Sofonica Anguissiola, don't talk to me about for Sofonica Anguissiola. Thank you.
Next up, Patty Doyle.
Yeah, sonnet, I love sonnet. Come to me, my sea-bright blue-eyed love. My hands are trembling with desire to tread the five-honed features of your precious face, your breath, the soft sweet curve above your thighs. Come, we must die to all that is human. Come to know again the peace of river, rock, meadow, mountain, the heartbreaking beauty of a Kurulu's pride. Come run your fingers through my header scented hair. Lay your body down on my soft green grass. My poems to you are rough ripple streams. Thrush's wings singing in the evening air. And when all these things have come to pass, we'll be the ever-living substance of all dreams.
Thanks, Patty. There are two Allens in the house, Alan Tidley and Alan, who hasn't given his second name.
Okay.
Oh, Alan Copley. Next up.
That's Alan of the One-Eyed Warrior. Big name topic. So, chapter on abuse. Fecum who os macor is tu shinta, is mincha grit or nos maguida. She is castrach in the vodale alina, buolum bet in the pasta arish. Atomic shatav, far morga jo, is fecum who shinta, is buolum re or nos maguida. Os macor thon solis, is in Gilopsis bear, tan Dorcadus Murhimpul, a Gleanon spare, tan Spoth full of this man impression, lean there at Infiliate Dug and Kyol, Gleanon spare, this man.
Next up, Donna Koonin. The Children's Party. When a child, pure joy was the hot little envelope in the bag between the school books to be taken home and shown, proud and included. And usually, on a Saturday, maybe 8 houses away, an invisible red carpet between the two, party dressed and tall, juggling wrapped parcel and slippy card, clock watched, starters orders, and we're off. Colours that wobble and triangular layers, porky sausages, miniature, and the cake, with her name campaigned across it, pink rice paper flowers, and silver balls centered on each piped rose, a 3-inch satin ribbon tailored round its waist, mounted on a silver base.
Thank you very much. It's very difficult to follow some of the great poetry that's gone on, and I was thinking of Paul with a dentist. The very first dentist I had was a guy up in the Mardi called Dr. Hackett. He lived down to my reputation. All in all, it was a boring job, but there you go. And so on. And it's hard to crown what he's been talking about. Anyway, this is a poem called Being a Man, which is about men and women. As we know, men don't understand women, women don't understand men, but we kind of do at the same time. So it's from a man's point of view, because I don't know any other. It's about being a man. There are advantages in being a man. It's evident that, thankfully, we can't become pregnant. Whining may be the act of a young boy practicing to be a man, but we can play with toys all our lives. We don't need makeup on our face, and when going on holidays require just one suitcase. And no matter what the mouth or even what you say, it is the same mood and temper every day. Wedding plans take care of themselves like life, and we can do our nails quite well with a pocket knife. The Christmas shopping we complete in half an hour. You can have the kitchen, but the garage is always ours. People don't stare at our chests when they talk to us. One or two pairs of shoes is more than quite enough. These shoes too are always good and fair and neat. They don't blister, cramp, or mangle up our feet. As for hairs, they're at our tall and beck. We only need to shave our face and neck. On the phone we don't chatter on about this and that. Our conversations conclude in less than 30 seconds flat. We may waste much time in bullshitting loud in bars, but despite that, we can still open all our own jars. And even the dandy, the fop, the effeminate flash has still the choice to grow or not his own moustache. To us, chocolate is just another snack, forsooth, and car mechanics will always tell us the truth. But when it comes down to it, and this is really final, the world is not only our oyster, but also our urinal.